And so I appreciate that she recognizes, like, in the same way that we look back at 10 years of the podcast and go, listen, they've all not been home runs. Like, we know that. Like, we had to learn and figure out our rhythm and all the things.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's just been 10 years of full smoke.
Great.
That's just my perception.
That's why you took 150 episodes off the off the archive.
Hello and welcome to episode number 514 of the podcast. I'm your host, Knox McCoy.
And I'm your other host, Jamie Golden.
The podcast is a show dedicated to delightful idiocy, and we're committed to educating you on things entertaining but do not matter.
To find out more about these chivalric pursuits, check us out at knoxandjamie.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and Threads at The Podcast, and we're on Twitter at Podcast Pod.
Still Threads? I feel like it turned on Threads.
Listen,
right? It
was we're like there.
Cool, now not.
To be honest, we're there, but we're not active because
is anyone active? I haven't been back.
The marketers, they're always there. They're always like, hey guys, here are 7 ways to get more engagement. And it's like, I see your follower count of all those followers you bought.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I don't know. Yeah, strange how that works. Thanks for joining us this week as we are going to be deep diving A Knight's Tale.
But before we do that, guys, I know this is the part of the episode that you skip forward because this is your chance to not listen to a part of it. But listen, no, I want you to listen because this is your chance to get something for $0. Now, we have a membership community on Patreon with 11,000 folks in it, and you can now, brand new information, get a free 7-day trial of being a best friend of the show, a B5. So how do you do it? Just head over to knoxandjamie.com/free trial. Or click the link in Indy's fantastic show notes. Now, this will take you to Patreon, where instead of join now, you will see a button that says start free trial. Enter your info, you won't be charged, and you'll gain access to all the BFOTS benefits offered, including previous posts. So what does that get you? You get cinema side pieces on Gone Girl, Steel Magnolias, Twister, 21 Jump Street, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, While You Were Sleeping. You'll get access to our last 12 monthly live stream AUAs. In our July AUA, Knox had a secret that someone in the chat revealed, and you see Aaron and my reaction in real time. Do you still want, you want to talk about that secret? Knox?
No, people are skipping this, so it doesn't even matter.
That's fine. Okay. And then, plus, we do special episode series, including What Should I Watch Next and Pilot Program, where just this week we take a look back at the pilot of the juggernaut that was Desperate Housewives, a show whose first episode had 3 million more views than the last episode of Game of Thrones. So start your free trial today to see what the fuss is all about being a BFOTS. Head to knoxandjamie.com/free trial.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi, Jamie. We are here. We're gathered here today to talk about A Knight's Tale, a movie that I think I knew in advance I had not seen before. And you revealed right before we started recording that you had also not seen before.
I thought I had, but then I realized, no, I've just seen clips. I've never seen, because most of the movie I was like, I have no, I did not know that I would see so much Paul Bettany bottom. And
that's right.
I had no idea. So I have never seen, but I also realized, I went back and was like, why did I not see this? It was May of 2001. And that might have been the least amount of income I ever had on a W4, which or W2, which is $11,000 is how much I made that year. And so there was no money for movies.
No, there was no money.
I could only go see the movies at the $2 theater, and that was like 6 months after they came out.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I ever made it. I don't know if A Knight's Tale ever made it to the $2 theater.
Man, shouts to those like $2 theaters, like $1 theaters, you know, where it's like, look, it's sketchy in here. It's full prison rules, but you're paying $2 to see a movie, and those just don't exist anymore.
This seat has never been cleaned. This floor has its entire history on it still.
Yes. You will need like the outbreak suits to wear into here so you don't die, but you're seeing a movie for a reasonable amount of money.
That's right.
I miss them. I was graduating high school, and I guess I just missed this, but this also probably wasn't like in my sweet spot. And I just never caught up on it. I don't know what I thought this was, but I didn't have like a big Heath Ledger era, and jousting like never, I don't know, just didn't pop off for me personally, you know? So just complete blind spot. And, you know, we were planning the calendar of episodes. Christiana revealed that this was her favorite movie of all time. So it felt kind of preordained that, well, we have to talk about this movie now.
That's exactly right. So the interesting thing is we in episode 508 in June, we talked about jousting randomly, and neither of us could think of what the thing is called. And that's what happened. We had a ton of listeners reach out and be like, it's called a lance. Hello.
Yeah.
And they kept sending us that gif. And so Indy was like, I think a lot of people have seen A Knight's Tale, and Christiana loves it. Why shouldn't we do a cinema side piece on it?
So sure, sure.
It worked out perfectly.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And like Jamie alluded to, this will follow our cinema side piece format that we do for our patrons. It's one of my favorite things we do, where we just take a movie, either current or an older movie, like as is the case today, and we run down some general conversation, and we do some superlatives in it that can take us different places. So as we do that, Jamie, do you want to kind of set the context line here and talk about some info, some of the people involved in this movie?
That's right. So this is A Knight's Tale. It came out in 2001 in May. It is a medieval adventure comedy film written, co-produced, and directed by Brian Helgeland. Now, this film stars Heath Ledger as William Thatcher, who is a peasant squire who poses as a knight and competes in tournaments, winning accolades and acquiring friendships with such historical figures as Edward the Black Prince and Geoffrey Chaucer. It's weird to be set in the 1300s, but I get it. So this movie, A Knight's Tale, Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score is 20 points lower than the audience score.
Okay. Critic score is 20 points lower. I'm going to say 54 and 74.
59 and 79.
Okay. Yeah, That feels about right.
The critics' consensus was, once you get past the anachronism, A Knight's Tale becomes a predictable, if spirited, Rocky on horseback. Do you think that's fair?
I don't think that's fair. But I understand it. I understand.
So this movie had a $65 million budget, which is a pretty large budget for a movie that made 22 years ago. And it made $117 million, which at the time in 2001 would have been considered a failure. You always want it for a success. You had to make back twice. You had to make back the money it cost plus make twice as much. It opened number two. It didn't even open number one because it was opening against The Mummy Returns. Oh, Erin gasped. Like, she was so excited. But I will say, A Knight's Tale stayed in the top 10 for 5 weeks. It was not, I know you might be surprised, it was not nominated for any Oscars, but it was nominated for 3 awards at the 2002 MTV Movie Awards.
That's right. I saw that.
Shannon Sossaman was nominated for Breakthrough Female Performance. Thankfully and rightfully, she lost to Mandy Moore in A Walk to Remember.
I'm sorry, did you say she lost to Mandy Moore, who should have won? Because in my notes, I scored it. Britney Spears at Crossroads should have won that breakthrough female performance, Jamie.
How dare you? That's breakthrough what I saw. Performance?
You've also got Anne Hathaway on that docket, and I feel like that's a good, there's a that good is case a
breakthrough.
For her as
well. That is a breakthrough performance. So, and I thought this year was interesting because obviously you have Heath Ledger in the lead. He is only 21 years old in this movie, which is stunning. You have Shannon Sossaman playing what I would argue is a cinema side piece, the quintessential cinema side piece. And then we get Rufus Sewell, we get Mark Addy, we get Alan Tudyk, and we get Paul Bettany as Geoffrey Chaucer.
And I got to be honest with you, when Geoff Chaucer shows up, Mind blown. I didn't know that. I didn't know Paul Bettany was in this. So I'm just like, what is a nude man? What is nude? What's his name in the Avengers? It's like
Jarvis.
Choice or no, Vision. No, no. Vision. Yeah, man. I knew it was a cool one word thing. But so like when he shows up, I'm like, what is this movie? What's happening right now? But yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. This is a muddled story that is it Rocky? Is it a commentary on status and class? Is it a rom-com? I don't know if it's any of these things. I don't know if it's all these things.
See, I think you say muddled. I say huge success. I like that it's both a friendship film and a rags-to-riches film and a sports film and a historical film. Like it. It's a weird musical at certain points that I don't understand. But I kind of liked, because I read that the director, Brian Hegland, he said he had scribbled down some ideas about what a fun jousting movie might look like, because he had read a book on medieval jousting. And he said, every time you do a medieval movie, it's about freedom. He said, nothing against Braveheart, but is that all they thought about in medieval times? If someone farted in 1370, everybody surely laughed. And so I kind of like that approach, because I'm a quintessentially anti-Braveheart. I know that's not going to make me any friends, but
what's your hot take against Braveheart?
It's fine. I mean,
are you just giving me a mid on Braveheart when you're like a Knight's Tale is like iconic?
No, I'm not saying a Knight's Tale is amazing, but I will say I've had a better time watching a Knight's Tale today than I have ever had watching Braveheart. I've had to watch Braveheart a lot because I've dated guys who are like, this is the best movie ever made.
That's going to be my case. I feel like it's been poisoned by dudes who are like, this is my personality now, versus like, it's a fine movie. It's fine. It's a good movie.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's not special though. Like, calm down. Like, you know what I mean? But listen, did you know that Geoffrey Chaucer, I think I've mentioned this before, Ancestry.com figured out through my uncle has done a like aggressive genealogy of my family, and my family is super boring because we could not be whiter.
Just get to it. I know. You're related to Geoffrey Chaucer.
Geoffrey Chaucer's my 14th grandfather.
I mean, it's a good look for him in this movie.
It's actually the only like cool person in my ancestry. I mean, they're cool like in their own way, but not like famous cool.
Historically cool.
That's right.
Yeah, like with a gambling problem, you know? And I can relate to somebody like that.
You know, I understand that.
You know, I think after seeing this, I do think it's a specific kind of movie. I didn't come away with this and be like, whoa, this was like elite level directing. And I think I'd never heard of Brian Helgeland, or however you pronounce his last name, especially as a director. I just haven't seen a lot of his stuff because he hasn't made a lot of stuff. Writing wise, he's pretty accomplished. Like
is he?
I mean, he wrote Mystic River. After A Knight's Tale, he's written L.A. Confidential, which is a great script. The Postman, which is not, but he does A Knight's Tale. He does Mystic River. He does Man on Fire. He does Green Zone. He does 42. And these are all really well done, good stories. So I think that's why I was a little surprised at how, I think jumbled is the word. Not that it's not a good movie. But I think secretly in this movie, there are some really fascinating stories that I wish had had more room to breathe, you know?
Yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah.
And so I think with all of it together, it gets a little crowded out and suffocated. But, you know, watching this, I think I didn't realize how sports movie-ish it was. And if you told me it was going to be a sports movie, but just like about jousting, I would have been a little dubious. And then I think after having seen it, I remain a little dubious.
Well, I would say jousting is not, for the most part. Oh, I forgot to tell you, when I got here today, Aaron told me that her cough is bad.
Oh no, Aaron, is this like new COVID? is this like COVID 2 electric boogaloo?
No, it's just, you know, I get a little summer cold.
That lasts 7 months.
That lasts for the majority of the year. It's fine. It's fine.
I choose to believe Aaron. I think Aaron is trying to channel the 1300s with a little bit of a nice black dust.
Yeah, a little bit of plague.
So you'll probably be dead by the end of this episode, though.
Yeah, so sayonara, everyone.
That's right. So for me, jousting, it really is just like a lot of buildup to not, I'm going to be honest, not that. As somebody who watched the Wimbledon finals this weekend and was like, go, little man, you're so good.
Yeah.
This jousting seems like a lot of hoopla for not a lot of payoff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, unless you die. Like, other than that, like, that's cool. But for the most part, it's just like it's a sport that takes, 20 seconds? That doesn't seem impressive.
Look, it is. Let's just call it. I mean, this is kind of one of my lost the movies. So I'll go ahead and cannibalize it here. It is essentially the most phallic sport. And it's two men running their pee-pees at each other and seeing which one blows up first. And everyone watching. That's kind of... So there's some cool fireworks to it. That's kind of cool. But at its core, it's very redundant. But I do think they did a good job of... Again, like it's just two guys on horses riding at wooden sticks with each other. The amount of times we had to watch it, it didn't feel as redundant as I feel like it could have in the lesser hands, in the hands of a lesser director.
So I'll share a couple of fun facts here. So the lances they were using were hollow inside. And so the filmmakers were like, we need it to look like it's real, though, like that it's solid wood and that it splinters. And they figured out that pasta could look like wooden splinters. So there was dry linguine noodles in the lances that they built.
Wow. Oh, that's right? What's exploding out every time?
That's right. And then none of the actors were allowed to do their own stunts, no matter how much they ask. And Heath Ledger said in an interview, he said, I did eventually understand the logic behind this decision because one jouster stuntman got his jaw ripped back and had to have 15 stitches. And then he was back riding 2 weeks later. And then he got the same exact injury again.
I don't love it. Not loving it.
I don't love it.
Not a fan of that. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get to some of the superlatives. For you, who or what won this movie?
I do actually think Heath Ledger won this. He is weirdly incandescent in this. Like, you're really drawn to his face. It's not just that, though. Physically, he's very pretty as a blonde man who normally could not be trusted.
Yeah.
But he's very...
He's 21 in this, Jonah Hill. Watch out. Okay, be careful. You know?
He can wear a swimsuit if he wants to. I don't care. But he's dead. My bad. So he's very...
Jason, keep it. Keep it. Keep it. It's good.
It.
It's just real.
It's just real. It's facts. He's just dead. I don't know what to tell you. So he's very hot. He's... Just his skin, like I just went, 21-year-olds and their skin. Look how beautiful it is. And then also I do think he does a great job of it feels like he is legitimately very connected to his little squad of friends. Like he does, I feel the camaraderie among them so much so, which is going to make up later for the lack of any chemistry having with that stupid brunette.
Sure.
But I don't want to give away all my feelings right out of the gate.
Right.
But I was looking and I was thinking, God, 21 years old, like, where is this in the Heath Ledger? Because as a reminder, he really didn't make a lot of movies because he died at 28. And so, but like the year, it's like 10 Things I Hate About You. The next year is The Patriot.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year is A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
And this year he'll make A Knight's Tale and Monster's Ball. I completely forgot that he was in Monster's Ball.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I forgot that, but I think it's because it's all the Billy Bob about it all. You know what I mean? But this is a guy who goes on and he's like Brokeback Mountain and then The Dark Knight. And it's just what an iconic career for somebody just in their 20s to make such huge films. And I thought he did a really good job in this. Like he carried emotion well. He carried excitement well. He carried passion and ambition well. Like I think he portrayed all of that with a lot of groundedness, which I was really impressed with.
It does. It feels like for him in this, because you're right. Like, personally, I think he's better in 10 Things I Hate About You than he is in this. I don't think he has much to do. It doesn't have as much like cinematic latitude to be interesting. But he just looks like a star. He just looks like I'm going to be a big deal. It's like watching the McDonald's High School America game, and you just see the people who are going to be like huge in a couple years. This is not the medium for them, but eventually they will find that. That's kind of what it looks like. Your eye is kind of drawn to him in a way because he's the main character. But even if he wasn't, he looks so different and he acts so different from everybody else. I don't really think the character is there for him in this, but he is. You can tell immediately that there are going to be much bigger things for him going on, like movies like this. You know?
Well, and I will say about this, that he auditioned with the director. He was on a three-week break from shooting The Patriot in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was heading home to Australia, because I always forget that he's Australian.
Right.
And he was heading home to Australia, and he had a long layover at LAX. And so the director said, well, I'll just meet you at a restaurant in the airport, mm-hmm. because he can, because this is pre 9/11.
Right.
And he goes and he said, while I was sitting at the table, he had read the script. He really liked it. And then he unpacked a long wooden tube at the table. And he said he ended up playing the didgeridoo. And I just said to myself, well, this is the guy.
Wow. Okay.
Why?
How did you get to this?
Playing a didgeridoo. And then Alan Tudyk, he said a really nice thing. He said, I have a very close friend of mine who died of a drug overdose during the shooting of the film. Heath called me and said, what are you doing? He actually knew him and I was drinking. And he said, buddy, get in a cab and come over to my place. And he took care of me for 3 days. He was younger than me, but he took care of me. He was a leader on set.
Okay. That's really
lovely.
So that
made me really like him, like even more. So.
Now, I have some questions about his hair in this movie.
Well, there's some questionable choices made at the beginning of the film by giving him dreads. Love that.
I was like, whoa, this is a choice. I don't know the medieval dreadlock situation, but that feels strange. But then it just kind of disappears randomly. And then he's just got like cool cousin of Justin Timberlake's NSYNC hair. You know?
And it is the cool cousin of, because Justin Timberlake's hair is awful, and this is very cool looking. It's like, it feels like you could put your hands through it and not get trapped, you know?
right. Okay, I'm going to say, I don't even know if I believe this, but I'm going to commit to it like I do believe it, because I feel like I believe it. I'm feeling it. It's rising in me. I think Paul Bettany wins the movie for me.
He was excellent in this.
I love him in this. I think he's got tons of charisma. I think the Geoffrey Chaucer character takes it to the next level. I'm a big fan of, here's this like weirdo historical figure, and now he's going to insert himself into the narrative, not to be the star, but to kind of be a casual star, or like a supporting to the main character. But I think in a lot of ways, I got more interested in Paul Bettany as Geoffrey Chaucer than I was in Heath Ledger's Will character. You know, a lot of it is because Will has to just kind of carry the center of gravity. He's just got to be the guy holding a wooden phallus and like hitting other dudes with the wooden phallus. So he's limited in that respect. But I thought like there's a Geoffrey Chaucer, there's the writing aspect, there's the gambling aspect, there's the person of two worlds who knows how to speak to, you know, the hoi polloi, but also he can be aristocratic. And it just didn't get as packed as much as I wanted to.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about who is your eye drawn to, obviously Heath Ledger. But in a lot of ways, Paul Bettany, I was fascinated in his performance.
I was drawn to that buttocks he showed a couple of times. Like,
okay,
you know what I mean?
I mean, they're definitely buttocks, right?
Yeah.
Are they interesting buttocks? I don't know that they are.
No, they're not. They have the potential to be. You can see the before photo of what they could be, you know, sure. And I don't know that he ever got there, but I was looking at his IMDb. He makes this film the same year he makes A Beautiful Mind,
whoa,
which is where he's going to meet his wife, who he is still married to, Jennifer Connelly. And the next year he makes The Heart of Me, which nobody remembers, but then he makes Master and Commander. Then he makes Wimbledon. Remember?
I love Wimbledon.
He won Wimbledon against and not against, because they weren't competing, but Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah,
Wimbledon. That's a hot film. Then he's the Da Vinci Code. Remember him as the pale?
Was he like a
villain? Silas, the villain.
Yeah.
And then he does the very next year. He becomes Jarvis in Iron Man, which is going to let him be Vision later on. So
he really kind of disappears though. Like after 2004-ish, he kind of disappears into, he's either Jarvis, or he's just taking kind of bad roles. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if there's not a need for him or if that's just like his picker was broken for a little bit. But this reminded me, I feel like he's very capable, very interesting performer when he wants to be.
You know, he could have been, I'm surprised he didn't take the mantle left behind by Philip Seymour Hoffman, because he feels like he could be a great character actor.
Yeah.
Like that he just can really.
He's too attractive. I think he's too attractive. He's stuck in no man's land, you know? Which, speaking of Jennifer Connelly, so I've introduced my son. We have, you know, this big movie summer list we're trying to blow through. We did Top Gun. Now we did Top Gun Maverick.
Okay.
I just want to say, Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
She is underratedly incredible in Top Gun Maverick, you know?
You mean that?
I really do mean that. I 100%
really
mean that. Yes, because she.
You thought she had chemistry with Tom Cruise?
No, that's the thing.
No, okay.
She created something in a nothing place, because he brings nothing to her, but she makes me believe that potentially there could be some chemistry.
Well, she does. She is stunning, and I do think she demands your attention wherever she is and whatever role she's in. So I love her. I do love her. But I did leave that movie going, they have never even touched each other.
Not even close.
Not at all.
And the one question my son had was like, so she's a really attractive woman running this bar in the middle of nowhere, and she also drives like this platinum Corvette. What's this? Why? How? What's going on here?
Oh, you need to explain to him that it's really easy to drive a nice car and not have a lot of money.
Well, I was like, but when you finance things over 120 years, you can drive anything if you really want to.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay. Who lost the movie for you?
Listen.
We might be aligned on this one, weirdly.
I get that it was her first film ever, and boy, can you tell. Shannon Sossaman, you are a situation. You are not. And listen, she doesn't really do a lot of acting after this. I read in an interview that she said if she could go back, she would never have said yes to this film. Mm-hmm. Not because the film was bad, because she was like, I was 23. I dropped out of school to do this. I wish I wasn't ready to be famous in any way. And I didn't have enough experience to help carry a film. And so I appreciate that she recognizes, like, in the same way that we look back at 10 years of the podcast and go, listen, they've all not been home runs. Like, we know that. Like, we had to learn and figure out our rhythm and all the things.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's just been 10 years of full smoke.
Great.
That's just my perception.
That's why you took 150 episodes off the off the archive. But what I'm saying is she's pretty. And that is all we are bringing to the table. She is pretty. I do like that Kate, the character of the blacksmith, says her breasts are not even that impressive. That's a true statement. That she didn't
Kate,
even bring
coming
good
over the top belt. Dang, girl, what you doing? Look, but I think, okay, I will yes and what you're saying. Okay. But I will clarify and say it's not Shannon Sossaman just herself. I don't know that I think she is apocalyptically bad.
Yeah.
I don't think the character has much to do.
True.
I don't know that the movie understands the character. I think it's the Heath Ledger, Shannon Sossaman relationship. I think it's the Will and the Jocelyn. I don't understand the relationship because but I think it's A+ casting because Shannon Sossaman is to call her attractive is an understatement. She is emphatically super, super hot and gorgeous. I think she did some modeling. So I understand the choice. But I don't understand the development of the relationship. Like, obviously, they're attracted to each other. These are the two hottest people in this movie by a country mile. But I think at different parts, I thought the movie was setting up Will was, you know, falling for her, but actually, like, his heart was with the blacksmith.
I know, me too.
I forget her name.
Listen, the blacksmith had chemistry with everybody.
She did. She did. And she goes on. She's in, like, Breaking Bad in, like, a key late character and a late season character in Breaking Bad. And she's really good because I knew I'd seen her somewhere. But I thought – but obviously that character gets a little underdeveloped. But it kind of seemed like Shannon Sossaman's character is the person you think you should fall in love with really the person, like, was all with you all along the way.
Yes,
you know?
That would have been a more interesting story. Yeah.
Because I think writing – when they're all writing the letters, like, helping Will come up with the letters that he's not writing, it felt like it was a dishonorable kind of courtship, you know?
Yeah.
But then it was born out as, like, cool and, like, lovely and romantic at the end. And even when she's like, yes, Will, I will live with the pigs inside with you, I'm like, No, you won't.
Why would you?
I wouldn't do that. Your attractive level would not do that and should not do that, frankly. You're not supposed to do that at all.
And I felt like Heath Ledger had chemistry with, like, the horses more than he had chemistry with her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know, like, who is she? Like, is she a holy person? Is she a royal? If she is, who's she connected to? Because she's always kind of sitting next to the king or, like, the presiding
person.
She's
just vaguely noble. Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not going to trip on that too much. I think the bigger problem was she falls in. There's a, if you want to call this a sports movie, there's a trope in sports movies, especially, you know, 80s, 90s, where it's called the wet blanket girlfriend.
Oh.
And it's like the guy is trying to do his thing and be athletic and legendary. Unfortunately, he's got this stupid freaking wet blanket girlfriend who's just trying to ruin everything. It's, if you've seen Jerry Maguire, Regina King is a wet blanket girlfriend. Rosie Perez in White Man Can't Jump. Adrian and Rocky, I think in Rocky 2, is a wet blanket girlfriend because she's like, you should work in an office or a butcher place instead of boxing because it makes me sad.
She said that to Rocky?
Yeah, he does. No, and the office place won't even hire him, which I'm like, what a missed opportunity. Because you could be like, we're the paper supply company that has Rocky, but that's neither here nor there. But it's this female character who exists to add to the adversity of the heroic, athletic central character instead of just, like, supporting. And for her to be like, hey, you just need to get dump trucked by that guy's wooden phallus for the whole tournament. And right. Honestly, I wasn't counting, but I thought rounds were just, like, first to three or whatever. And he gets killed in that match, like, at least 2011 times. Like, he gets hit an innumerable amount of numbers.
I was like, when does this end? Does he have to die?
Is there a mercy rule? Can we keep the clock running,
please?
Golly,
you guys.
But yeah, that was my biggest issue with her, is just not understanding, because I thought at a certain point, the movie became about their relationship when I really wish it was about Roland, it was about Ginger Guy, and it was about blacksmith lady girl.
Yes.
That relate, because that trio or quad relationship felt like the strongest character-wise.
For sure, for sure.
You know?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Aura Frames. I am super excited to share that this brand is not only Knox and Jamie approved, but more importantly, it's Chuck and Jan approved. Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected frames with unlimited storage, so you can share as many photos as you want from your phone and they just magically appear on the frame. If Chuck and Jan aren't enough of an endorsement, it's also been named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter. It's such a fun gift for all ages. Do you know what my favorite part of the Aura frame is? I haven't been called over to Chuck and Jan's house even once for like Tech Sunday to like set it up, to fix it. It's truly the perfect set it and forget it gift in the best way possible. I was over to their house for Easter dinner. My niece sent all the adorable photos we had taken of my cutie patootie great nephews to Chuck and Jan's Aura frame. And it was so easy and seamless and fun to have the photos show up before we even left the house. Jan is the most difficult person to buy gifts for. And I was excited to see how much she loves her Aura frame because I immediately decided to get one for her bedside table for Mother's Day this year. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use code podcast at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Olive & June. As a longtime user, like 6 years, and a huge fan of Olive & June, I still can't get over how easy and convenient their Manny systems are. Between hosting 2 podcasts, planning a live show, and our latest merch launch, I haven't had much time for like self-care and sitting around at a salon for hours. No time, but I do love having pretty nails, and it's during these busy, hectic times that I'm especially thankful for Olive & June. Their Manny and Petty systems come with everything you could possibly need to have salon-worthy nails genuinely at home whenever you want them, even if you only have 5 minutes. I love how Olive & June, they've created products for those of us with a lot on our plates who maybe are not great at doing their nails. Like, I don't have a ton of skill set. And look, they've made it easy. The number of times I've done my nails in a rush as I'm about to run out the door and then end up smudging them, it's super embarrassing. You'd think I'd learn by now, but no more. Olive & June's line of tab press-ons are a life hack I never want to live without. They're so easy to put on and come in different sizes, so you can always find the perfect fit for you. They look so real and they last like 10 or more days, and they're not damaging like gel. I love that I can order them as part of the Manny system with up to 4 different tab sets. It's the perfect time-saving prezi for myself. Visit oliveandjune.com/podcast for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/podcast for 20% off your first system. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Has everyone's social calendar suddenly picked up, or is it just me? This is that magical time of the year when I can actually enjoy a patio lunch with Jan or just be outside for longer than 10 minutes without immediately regretting every life choice. You know what I mean? Since this beautiful weather only lasts about 5 days in Alabama, it's always tempting to cram in as many social gatherings as possible, for I need to limit myself to indoor-only activities, and it can be easy to ignore my social battery and spread myself too thin. As an extrovert, I tend to thrive around people, and I always thought the more the merrier when it came to social commitments. Therapy has been super helpful in giving me the self-awareness I needed to build a social life that does not drain my battery. Being able to not only recognize my boundaries, but be able to enforce them has been so helpful in creating some balance in my life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Since it's entirely online, the convenience truly cannot be beat, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/podcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/podcastpod.
They really hit on an interesting topic with Shannon Sossaman, with her character, or with Jocelyn, when they were talking about beauty as a curse, you know?
Yeah.
And the
oh, is it priest, hard for the hot people?
Yeah. Well, the priest was like, you pray your years go fast or whatever, so you don't look as hot for so long. But I thought that's an interesting kind of subplot in a movie as like this really attractive woman who actually like doesn't want to be attractive or something, but they never like revisited it again. She was I'm hot.
Well, and I will agree with you that with you on that, because right now on TikTok there's a trend of an aging filter, and so people, and it's a really well done filter. Like it's clear they're taking actual features of your existing face and just doing what age is going to do to you. So you're going to be more gaunt, you're going to have jowls, you're going to have more wrinkles, your hair's going to go gray. And the comedy is people, like really hot people, getting on there and being like, well, I guess everything's going to be over for me then. And then the people who are not hot, who are like, what, I look good, I look like my grandma, I love this. And I just go, oh, isn't that interesting? Like when you, when unfortunately the culture has told you your value is only in the visual.
Yeah.
And maybe you have not developed enough confidence in the other parts of your personality to know that your value comes from other places as well. The aging is very, it is a curse. Like,
yeah.
Because you're like, well, how am I going to be valued if I'm not hot?
And yeah, and it's like her character is aware of that. The actress, you would argue, is aware of that, that she's only cast for this reason, but then they just never go back to it.
Yeah, they don't pursue it.
I don't really understand why. And I think, I just think fundamentally, I think Shannon Sossaman has villain face. So you're always, it would be like Rufus Sewell, which we'll talk about in a second. If you make him the hero, I'm just never going to trust you because I'm always waiting to get backstabbed. And that with her, I kept waiting for her to cheat on Jack Black, you know, like in The Holiday, and be like, oh yeah, you suck the whole time. And I shouldn't have.
So is it because she's a brown-eyed brunette? Is that what lends itself? Because she's the counter to his blonde-haired, blue-eyed?
I don't think it's about her brown-eyed brunette. I think it's just she looks like the hot girl at school who wouldn't pay attention to you, you know?
Yeah.
Or it, like, feels like they're above you or something.
Right.
I don't, and it might just be like revising history to be like all the characters she plays usually kind of tend to be villainous.
That's true. That's true.
And maybe that's why I'm thinking that, but I do think fundamentally that's a hurdle to get over with her, you know?
Yeah.
Low-key MVP for you in this movie.
Listen, I did love the ensemble. Like, truly. Yeah. Particularly, I have a great affection for Alan Tudyk. I always have. He was in Firefly, which I loved just desperately. He was in a TV show called Suburgatory that I really loved. And I've always really had an affection for him in terms of sci-fi. And he's always been the actor who's always leaned completely into, like, Comic-Con and to fan festivals and, like, being very proud of having a sci-fi background. And I've always loved that. And he's really funny in this role, and he plays that character with just enough, like just enough twist that you're like, is he likable? Is he weird? Is he dumb? Is he smart? Does he have, an attraction to, like, when he's talking about, like, when they're creating the letter, that's when I really thought that ensemble really shine, because that's where he does a great job. I also will say, I'll give a low-key MVP to the name Ulrich von Lichtenstein.
Lichtenstein,
yeah. Which was an actual person, a 13th century German knight. He wrote poems and treatises, and he was a skilled jouster himself. He was most famous for a dubious autobiography in which he detailed his exploits traveling the countryside dressed as the goddess Venus while challenging men to joust.
I love it. That's wildly specific.
That's
actually
somebody I would be interested in meeting in real life.
That is a move for sure. This might be a hot take. I don't think you need Alan Tudyk in this movie. I don't think you need his character.
Why are you Heath Ledger's boring and you don't need Alan Tudyk?
No,
I love him.
You don't think
we need a ginger to keep things spicy?
I don't know why, because when I'm thinking of all his scenes, I think you could use Paul Bettany to do what he's doing, you know?
What about when he's kicking the dead knight or kicking the dead nobleman? That can't be Mark Addy. You got to have somebody kicking. You got to be somebody who's angry and, like, ridiculous. And then Mark Addy gets to be the more grounded. Roland gets to be the more grounded.
He is the more noble one. And look,
right.
I marked it. The 11-minute mark, I realized that's young Bobby B, young Bobby Baratheon.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Full Monty. That's full Monty Mark Addy. Like, I love
even
him.
Know. See, I've never seen that. But just getting to be with Robert Baratheon for another minute. God, that was strong. From Game of Thrones is just really good stuff. I'm going to put, I think this is true, and I don't actually know how I feel about it. So I'm going to talk it out. Needle drops. I think the needle drops in this. Because if when you talk about A Knight's Tale, you have to talk about the music.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think the music will either lose you or bring you in fully, depending on how you deal with modern-ish music with very, very established period piece movies. Did the needle drops bother you? Like when you're hearing We Will Rock You to a crowd who obviously would not be familiar with We Will Rock You and clapping to the beat, did that bother you?
Listen, it didn't. I actually liked it until. So it got me. I was in it. We will rock you. Bless. Taking care of business. Let's go. David Bowie, who, listen, I'll say it. It's been 10 years. Most overrated performer in history.
Okay.
Like,
wow.
Like top 10 most
He's
overrated.
He's no Alan Tudyk, I'll tell you that.
Like,
you
know, stop what I mean? It. Don't be mean. Listen, Golden Years, garbage song. Like, I read somebody that said, oh, it's finally when one of the, they were like, when one of the best songs came on was Golden Years. I'm like, are you suggesting that Golden Years is better than We Will Rock You? How dare you? Don't even. But the director, he did say in an interview, he said, look, the reason I did that is because the 70s are always the 70s, even 600 years apart. And I really like that. And he was like, I just wanted it to feel like this is not, like, young people in medieval times would have been rebelling against their parents in the same way that kids rebel against their parents now.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's why I wanted to play AC/DC. And so I kind of like when I Want to Take You Higher, Sly and the Family Stone, when that happened, I was like, yes, I love it. But I did not like Golden Years because I just do not like the song Golden Years.
Sure.
or David Bowie. So
yeah. Personal preference. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think I as a fan of Peaky fucking Blinders, they do that all the time. So it doesn't bother me at all. But I was a little like at the beginning, when they're doing the cast list and everything, and they're playing We Will Rock You, I was like, I don't understand this. And then they kind of neatly edited into it was almost like that was kind of the music, but you know, it couldn't have been the music. And I read that he wanted to use modern music for us to access so that he could channel what those audiences felt about their songs. Because he's like, whenever you hear like Renaissance fair music, you just think this is dumb. I don't like this. So you don't get like the intensity of the feelings that those audiences would have had. And I thought that's actually a pretty clever way to go about it, you know, channel something we know and understand. Best scene for you in this movie.
Listen, we've talked about this many times. I do love a montage. And so I'm going to get a medieval training montage to the tune of Lowrider. Thank you very much. That is what I was looking for. And I really enjoyed that. I also really enjoyed, I mean, like I did, I'm not ashamed. I teared up a little in the reunion scene with his father. Like I was like, he doesn't know because he's blind.
Look,
and I'll say the girl that she did not have a name in the cast list, but the little girl that played the lone girl, best actress in this film. Second.
Oh,
to the
yeah.
Best.
She was good, man.
She was excellent.
Was good stuff.
She should have played Shannon Sossaman's part.
The dad, I'm trying to look at his name. Christopher Cazenove, I think, was Heath Ledger's dad. He is, if you want to talk about points per minute, he gets like 20 seconds of playing time and he scores 40 points. He is emoting and crying and weeping so hard the whole time he's in. It's really good. It's like, it's really necessary, I think. I had the, to the montage, the only issue, I love montage as well, especially in like a sports-ish movie. The only problem I have, you can tell this was shot in one afternoon, you know?
Yeah.
So it didn't feel like this was over like 6 weeks. It felt like it was over 2.5 hours. And I needed a little bit more, you know, there.
I know. It's unfortunate that, because I think they say in the film he has a month, right? Like he has a month to figure it all out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like the budget was tight. And so they were like, we can make your hair look dirtier now. That's it. That's all we could do.
You know, I think that for me, if I had to give like a obnoxious producer note, I would say I would have liked to, because they start and he's jousting, but he's also doing sword stuff. And then he's like, no more swords. I'm just jousting. I think that I understand that character choice. I think in terms of the audience, it gets a little redundant and monotonous just seeing the wooden phalluses. So
yes.
I would have liked to see some swords, some spears, some mace. I don't remember what all they said, like you could do, but to see that would have broken up some of the monotony.
I agree with that.
You know,
I do.
I had the betting scene with the Frenchies when
good.
It's like when anything that focuses on Alan Tudyk, Robert Baratheon, Geoffrey Chaucer, and Blacksmith Woman, I like that. I like the vibe. It felt like football team chants, you know, over there.
Yeah.
Like when they sing their songs and everything. I liked all that. I like the very stereotypical French dudes. I don't know if that's offensive to like French people, how they were articulated, but it felt like it should be.
No, it's not. They're like, that's us. What do you want? That's
how
we are.
You
want to
talk about just like the biggest wieners in the movie. And I don't mean that as like a phallic conversation. I just mean these guys who you just want to shove out a window. That's what these dudes were doing.
I do like them saying, the Pope is French, but Jesus is English. And I was like, well, that's not accurate
at
all.
I don't even know what that means. What are you talking about, Robert Baratheon?
Yeah.
Jamie, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
Okay. So as a reminder, the Bechdel test was created by Alison Bechdel. It looks at the way that women are portrayed in film. It has three rules. The first rule, it has to have at least two named women in the cast list. We do have 17 named characters, and three of them are women: Jocelyn, Christiana, and Kate. And then the second rule is two of the women have to talk to each other. That does happen. Jocelyn, on occasion, talks to her servant, Christiana. Yep. Okay. Yep. And then third rule is they have to talk to each other about something besides a man. No, they only talk of men. So we did not get a that's actually the first movie in a long time that hasn't passed the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
That we've done a cinema side piece on. So it did not pass.
I would say this being the 1300s. And this being about a jousting tournament, like a rolling jousting tournament, it's probably going to be tough for them to pass that.
It is going to be tough. It is. And then,
speaking of passing, tough to pass, this next one's going to be.
Dang. So now we have the Latif test, which was created by Layla and Nadia Latif, which looks at the way that people of color are portrayed on film. And it has five rules. The first rule is, are there two named characters of color? Again, there are 17 named characters in this film, and none of them are people of color. Now, there was some debate online in Reddit of like, no, Shannon Sussman, she has like a great, great grandmother that's Filipino.
Okay.
But she herself does not self-recognize as a person of color. So
she
recognizes herself as white. And so there are no, and that's it, by the way, there are no other, I don't even think there was a person of color in the extras. I looked and I pay attention to that. And I don't think there, now this was filmed in Prague. I don't know how many people of color live in Prague in 2001 or 2000 probably. But yeah, there are no, so this does not pass the Latif test. Even step number one, it does not pass. So
yeah, it's not even close.
Which I will say to that, you know, you could make the argument, you could be listening and be like, well, but medieval, well, you're acting like they didn't exist. But also, I like that we're taking back. I like what Shonda Rhimes is doing and really leading the charge of like, hey, we're going to take back some of these stories and recognize that they're just fiction. And we're just setting them in a factual time, but we're telling fictional stories. And these people can be portrayed by anybody. Like, we're not going to worry about it. Like, we're not going to worry whether this person was actually Black or Asian, or we're not going to worry about any of that. We're just going to let great actors take on great roles. And we're not going to care that, like, well, a white person couldn't have been like a duchess. Like, that just couldn't have even happened.
Yeah, it's it doesn't. I think, especially when you're retrospectively evaluating movies from over 20 years ago, like, did they have enough diversity? I think it's important to what kind of story you're telling. So when it's this kind of story, I do understand probably the lack of diversity, because this in all likelihood was a Lily White kind of a scene and situation. However, this is a movie where we're also using We Will Rock You in the beginning. So there's some ability to be flexible with the factuality of it. So I wouldn't have been like one of the you can't have Black Hobbits bros, you know? Because it's like, hey, God, it's a hobbit, so it's just not
like
even
it doesn't exist
real thing
at all.
Fundamentally.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So like The Green Knight. What a great film.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to be like, we just didn't have to have, you know,
he shouldn't have been Indian guys. Like, it didn't make sense at the timeline. Like, well, it's, you know, it's about a Green Knight who magically comes to you on Christmas and makes a wager with you. Like, let's throw caution to the wind here a little bit. Does it pass the digital line test? I didn't hear it. I could have missed it, because it felt like Geoffrey Chaucer would have said it. But
I think
didn't
he says it at the end. Like, I think I'm going to write this knight's tale. So he doesn't say a knight's tale, but he does say this knight. He gets very close.
Yeah. I'm sure eagle-eared listeners will be like, no, it was at this minute mark, and I welcome that correction. But I didn't catch it, and I didn't make it for my notes. Does someone save the cat in this movie? When we say, does someone save the cat, this is the screenwriting basically format or formula which establishes that for the protagonist of your story, within the first 10 pages, they should do something honorable or heroic to let you know that they are worth rooting for. This one is kind of close, because, you know, you could argue Will steps up to take a headshot so that they can eat, you know? Maybe that's it. I would probably more classically say that he foregoes some of his winnings to make sure Geoffrey Chaucer doesn't get flayed. That's probably more, that's, yes, so it's like a save the writer, you know, save the author. Probably I would count that. But yeah, other than that, I didn't have anything else. Did you see anything else that made you want to root for him besides his hotness?
No, just that his
can
hotness.
Be enough. That can be enough.
Listen, that jawline. That was all I needed.
It's good. It's good stuff. Is there a Chekhov's anything? And again, a Chekhov's anything is a reference to the Chekhov's gun, which is a storytelling rule that you should pay very close attention to the details you include in your narrative, meaning that if you introduce a gun in act one of a story, it should be going off or factoring into the story by act three. This one, there wasn't a lot. A lot of the movies we've done recently have a lot of Chekhov's somethings. The only thing I could come up with was tilting jousting when you should withdraw that we get with Prince Edward. And then later it's paid back to Will when he's in the stocks. When he's like, you're tilting when you should have withdrawn, and he knights him, which I had a lot of questions about that. Like, what's the formality of this? Are you allowed to just knight people like that? And it's like binding. Did you need paperwork? I didn't see anything in triplicate. It just felt like there could have been a lot of problems with that knighting process, you know, at the end.
For sure.
Is there a miscommunication plot? This is the tendency of stories to rely on, oh, I didn't tell you, or my letter didn't arrive, or I mumbled and you didn't hear me. Will's identity is a miscommunication plot, so probably that. And I would also say Jocelyn telling Will to lose, but Will not telling his squad, and them having bet on with the Frenchies that he was going to win. That felt like something he would have said, hey guys, by the way, I'm going to have to throw this tournament for love, you know, just so you know.
Especially for somebody whose breasts aren't that impressive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Biggest reach. You have any biggest reaches in this?
I do have a few. One, there's a moment where we're supposed to believe that Roland and Christiana have sexual tension. Like, they kind of like look each other in the kind of in the like, but then I did remember that it is the 1300s. So women would have had no choices at all.
Least Roland seemed cool. He seemed like a cool guy.
He seemed like a cool dude. And then also, William at one point says to Jocelyn, you can't even eat a flower. You can eat flowers. Hibiscus, mint, lavender.
You can eat anything if you want to. Like, if you try
honeysuckle,
hard enough.
That's exactly right. And then her hair gets really curly at one point. And so I was like, could she have done that? And the history of curling irons, like the iron part goes back to the 1800s. And then in the 1700s, people would heat up bones on the fire. Bones on the fire to curl your hair. But in the 1300s, no. She would not have been able to have a cute curly hairstyle for the big match in London. She would not have been able to have that.
Wow, what a takedown. What a takedown. This whole movie falls apart now, you know?
Listen, and I know that's stupid to reach for that, but I hate her so much.
Are you kidding me? This is the perfect point.
Listen, I hate Jocelyn so much. I'm looking for everything I hate about her. I did not like that glitter strand in her hair like she'd been to the beach for the weekend. I didn't like that either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had there's at the beginning, the title sequence or the credit sequence, the one old lady in the crowd who couldn't keep the beat, but they kept showing her. God, have mercy on the elderly, please. The continuity of them showing us Heath Ledger getting ready to joust with his wooden phallus, but it obviously not being Heath Ledger's eyes behind the mask.
Right.
You know, it's obviously the stunt guy.
They didn't even match him up.
They
didn't
try. They did not even try.
No.
I thought the choice for Will to be arrested and like when he was trying to compete and ride against Admir, it didn't make a lot of sense beyond the plot needed him to, you know, so he could be like saved by Prince Edward. There was no reason for him to be like, I'm going to try to compete, but I know I'm going to get arrested and this isn't even going to like make any sense or do anything. I thought that was a failure.
We have to have a big scene. We have to have a big moment.
But they could have, I thought they were really clever at the beginning of subverting like, oh, we'll do this and this and you'll get your like helmet headshotted so bad that you can't reveal your face, you know, so like the jig will be up. But I thought that got a little sloppy. Also sloppy. Did they just green screen Heath Ledger in Paris? Like, did they just do like, where's Waldo? Here's a map. And it's Heath Ledger's face. Like
it felt like someone had drawn it with a pencil and they just unrolled a piece of papyrus and been like, stand in front of this. We'll make it seem like you're in Paris.
Look like a Rick and Morty in front.
It was not great.
It was bad. The dream sequence right after Admir is unhorsed for the first time. I didn't get it. I don't understand. He's like hovering above ground and, you know, Ginger and Roland and Blacksmith Lady and Will are all like, you got served, bruh. Like, get out of here.
Well, we have to circle back to that quote. That it's the third time. You have to say that quote three times. And that's when they say the quote the third time, you know, that you were measured and you were found wanting.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. Like, so he's dreaming that in mid-flight? I didn't understand it.
It doesn't make sense.
I also don't like, I just don't think they serve, not that they don't serve cat's meat and hot wine, but I don't think they advertise cat's meat and hot wine, you know?
No, I think they're calling it beef tenderloin.
Yes.
And right?
Roasted duck and cider, yes, or whatever. Right. But they're not being like, this is the worst possible combination of food and drink. No,
yeah, Taco Bell isn't like, this isn't grade A, you guys. Yeah. Just heads up. Like, they're just like, this is a cheesy taco.
They're not like Band-Aid burritos. Would you like some? You just get a Band-Aid in your burrito and you're like, well, you know,
it was worth it for that Baja Blast.
Have you ever heard a song on the radio and felt like it was written about you? That's why I'm so excited to share about our new sponsor, Songfinch. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. Whether your song is for Mother's Day, Father's Day, an upcoming graduation or wedding, or just to show a loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in a top Songfinch artist. I'm on their website right now, and I'm about to create my very first song. They've made it so easy. When you go to songfinch.com/popcast, all you have to do is click the big orange button that says start your song. In order to make the songs entirely original and personalized, they ask questions like, who are you creating this song for and what's your inspiration? You get to pick the artist who creates the song for you, or you can have Songfinch help you by selecting between genres, vocal styles, vibe, and tempo. You can get as detailed and personalized as you like, but the process couldn't be easier for a songwriting novice like myself. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anytime, anywhere. Go to songfinch.com/popcast and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, our URL is songfinch.com/popcast. Don't forget to share your song with us too, songfinch.com/popcast.
With our live shows coming up in June, I've obviously started doing a little shopping. It's always so fun to look for live show outfits and accessories and go through my travel checklist to see what might need a refresh. I don't need much of an excuse to get myself a Prezi, but one of the things I have on my list that I need to get before the new show is a new sun top from Pear Eyewear. Wearing my Pear Eyewear eyeglasses on travel days is probably one of my favorite life hacks, especially if you have an early morning flight. Who wants to wake up and have to deal with contacts before you have to get on a plane? Throwing on my glasses and then adding the sun top when I need them is just so much more convenient. I think the brushed rose sun top might be the perfect one to add to my collection. Pear sun top frames start at just $30 and the prescription glasses start at only $60. Don't forget that you can save even more by using pre-tax FSA and HSA dollars, and they always have free standard shipping and a flexible 30-day return policy. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code POP for 15% off your first pair. And support the show by mentioning that the podcast sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code POP.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Best quote out of this movie for you.
Oh, listen, there were so many things that I loved. First of all, I just love that it opened with, is he dead? The spark of his life is covered in shite. His spirit is gone, but his stench remains. I loved that. And then I also loved when William and Watt are talking and William says, I've waited my whole life for this moment. And Watt says, you've waited your whole life for Sir Ector to shite himself to death?
That's good writing. It's good. It just is.
So good. I love that. What about you?
That was mine too. I also had each drop of this sweat has a price on it. When you're trying to like monetize, when someone's trying to like cut your price,
yes,
that's what you need to respond with from now on. And then when Paul Bettany said, I'm a writer, I give a truth scope. That hit me hard.
Did you feel that? Did you want that in an embroidered t-shirt? Did you want that?
That's a, I give a truth scope. That's what I'm doing here in this life. Recast one role and why, Jamie?
Can you guess who I'm going to recast?
I feel like it might be Shannon Sossaman.
Listen, it's Jocelyn, and I have the guys, I literally have the perfect casting. She is the exact same age. You've already mentioned a movie she was in earlier in this episode, which is Crossroads. I'm replacing Shannon Sossaman with Zoe Saldana.
Whoa.
Same age, was in Crossroads. Like, she'd already been in Center Stage, so we've seen her as a ballerina. We've seen her as, like, hoity-toity. It's a perfect casting. It's a perfect casting.
The only pushback I have is I just don't know that the character gets to do anything. Like, they have failed the character, so it doesn't matter who's playing the part.
I know. I agree with you. But here's what happens. When you sit down, Brian Hegland is going to be like, wow, Zoe really can. She's very talented. I'm going to rewrite this on the spot and give her more to do and write her more interesting things. And I just think we, by nature, get a better. Because I just think also when you're looking at Shannon Sossaman, you're like, this is her first movie ever. She's literally in this moment learning where to stand on a mark. Because guys, I'm not talking about this is her first leading role. This is the first movie she's in ever. So she's having to learn everything about movies while also trying to carry the romantic lead of a movie. She just does not have the experience to be able to do that.
Yeah, you know, and I think I didn't see, I looked a little bit and couldn't find anything. It wouldn't surprise me if this was one of those deals where the movie got rewritten like halfway through and they had to change everything and fix everything, because you just don't put a first-time actress in a role like this to have to carry it. That's an insane thing to do. And I also think, you know, really the moment when Heath Ledger has to go to the banquet or whatever and dance, and they end up doing like the hustle, but it's kind of like a 60s vibe or whatever. And I was like, right. I don't know about this. That's where the movie kind of starts to lose me a little bit and really starts to drag. But it was like, after that point on, it got real muddled all of a sudden. And it's a rom-com, it's a sports movie, it's commentary on class, it's William wanting to be noble. He's got this relationship with his father all of a sudden. He's got these friends, Roland and Alan Tudyk, and then he's also falling in love. It just felt like it was trying to accomplish way too much, but it also like put too much on Shannon Sossaman's character to where I don't know if any actress can carry that, but I would like to see a more clear, even if this was just straight up sports kind of rom-com, I'd be okay with that, with a better actress and a cleaner, easier, less messy kind of storyline. I think that could actually work.
I agree.
You know, I thought you'd go with her. So I wanted to zig a little bit, and I wanted to offer you, what if I could offer you a trade? Okay. I will give you Heath Ledger. You can have Heath Ledger.
Okay.
Right now, okay.
All right.
In exchange, I'll take Josh Hartnett. Okay.
Absolutely not.
Josh Hartnett goes in this movie.
Okay.
A Knight's Tale, which is, it's fine. Heath Ledger goes into Pearl Harbor. You get Heath Ledger and Ben Affleck in Pearl Harbor.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Isn't that decent? What if you just did Heath Ledger for Josh Hartnett's 2001? Because Josh Hartnett in 2001, he does Town and Country, he does Pearl Harbor, he does O, which is secretly a great, great Othello movie with Mekhi Phifer, who, a little bit about me, at one time I held the most Mekhi Phifer stock out of anyone in the United States of America.
No, that's 100%
still
true,
holding it. It's not worth a lot. Penny stocks kind of stuff right now, so it's not great. But he also does Black Hawk Down.
But that's what he does instead of Knight's Tale. That means I have to give him up, because I do love him in Black Hawk Down. And really, I would say Black Hawk Down is why he ends up getting even... Now, he is a horrible picker from that moment on.
Yes, he does.
Right? Although, I will say, I forget how young Josh Hartnett is. He's only 44.
He's the same age. I think he's like a couple months older than Heath Ledger. So, same
that's
age.
That's right. So, but, and Josh Hartnett has been on the... He was on the red carpet of the Oppenheimer premiere. And I was like, oh, you look good.
Did you watch his Black Mirror with Aaron Paul?
Oh, that's right. Oh, he was so good in that. Okay, he's I forgot that he was in that.
So, it's like...
Okay, I will let you trade that. Yes, I will let
where
I will
I landed
it.
Was... I think Josh Hartnett's better than Heath Ledger. You know, I think I like him better. I think he fits better. I think
in this, but not as the Joker.
No, not as the Joker. I think the spiciness of this is that like Heath Ledger, I think he has leading man face, but he has supporting actor sensibility. You know, it's kind of like the little bit Brad Pitty where it's like, you look like this, so you have to be like this, but you're actually more engaging and interesting when you take smaller roles, you know? And I think Josh Hartnett, he isn't as attractive. He isn't as like viscerally hot as Heath Ledger.
Right.
So you can buy him in some weirder stuff. You can buy him as like hiding or like being in the background a little bit more. Whereas with Heath Ledger, you have to change his appearance like Joker to make
that's
him feasible
true.
In the background.
Heath Ledger is like a Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Like you can't ugly him up.
That's
you
right.
just can't. You
yeah.
can't.
Yeah. yeah. Okay. You got any fun facts in this movie?
I just have a couple. They shot a alternative ending to the movie in which the group discusses how they're going to spend their new riches.
Okay.
And Alan Tudyk said, I bought a ship And that was supposed to lead into the sequel, which was going to be A Pirate's Tale.
Ooh.
And them all go on an adventure.
Yo, is this why he's a pirate in Dodgeball?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe so.
Because his character is like, I'm a pirate. Like, identifies as a pirate.
Maybe he just always really wanted to be a pirate, too. That could be part of it. But Columbia Pictures was like, yeah, this movie didn't pop off, so we're not going to do a sequel. Also, this is my favorite fun fact about Columbia Pictures. In 2001, Columbia Pictures had 5 films released, and they marketed them with print ads that included positive comments by a movie reviewer named David Manning.
And it said that this is wild.
And that he was a film critic for the Connecticut newspaper, the Ridgefield Press, which is a real newspaper, by the way. But FYI, the Ridgefield Press does not have a movie reviewer named David Manning. It was made up by the ad department at Columbia Pictures. And as a result, there was a class action lawsuit filed. And the studio agreed in 2005 to refund $5 to every person who saw any of those 5 films.
What?
Is that not crazy? Because, guys, by the way, there's a class action suit against Facebook right now. And you can get, like, up to $100 if you've been on Facebook a long time. Like, so just go Google that.
Not a big class action lawsuit. Like, let me get my $37, guy. You know, I'm not saying I'm better or worse than anybody. I'm just saying it just feels like a lot.
I love that. Listen, I have done I got $7 from Google once. I love a class action. Do you want me to fill out a form?
I'm just like,
right now,
if I was on Facebook, I got on Facebook knowingly, you know, I didn't get manipulated into it.
I didn't know they were going to sell my data to Russia. I didn't know that.
I mean, once I started putting my credit card number on the internet, I was like, this is probably not going to end well.
Well, you're better than all of us. And I'm going to go get my $125 from Mark Zuckerberg. I'm going to get it. That's all my fun facts.
Heath Ledger and Shanna Sussman were nominated for Best Kiss at the MTV Music Awards.
They lost that to American Pie, right?
That's right. They lost to American Pie. Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor were nominated as well. And Renee Zellweger and Colin Firth and Bridget Jones' Diary. I've not seen Bridget Jones' Diary. There's no way that should have been nominated.
Wix hasn't seen Bridget Jones' Diary?
Wait, you haven't seen Bridget Jones' Diary?
What about you? What about me makes you think I would have seen
Bridget Jones' Diary is fantastic.
Would he love it or hate it?
Oh, he would love it.
Oh, my gosh.
He would love it. It's a really well-done
film.
We have to do it. That can be your birthday movie for Cinnamon Side Piece. We'll pick it
that
for you.
That will not be my birthday movie
oh
for Cinnamon.
Oh, my gosh. You would love
I might pick
Jones'
it.
Diary.
I might pick it for my birthday movie because that is a pretty good... It's a retelling of Pride and Prejudice.
No,
it's
don't
fantastic.
Tell him, Jamie.
Oh,
that's going to ruin
oh,
it.
No. Since you guys have spoiled it, we probably shouldn't do it now, you know? Okay, well, that is our conversation on A Knight's Tale. If, as always, if you have thoughts and opinions on our thoughts and opinions, please let us know at nightshow.com/514. All right, Jamie, you want to do some lights?
Let's do some lights.
All right, what is your red light this week?
Listen, you're not ready. You're not ready, Knox. I'm going to have to red light my own life as a podcaster. Because, listen, I got an email this week for an ARC. An ARC is, for those who don't know, it is an advanced reader copy. We get contacted sometimes by publishers, not very often, actually. Like, it's actually rare that we get contacted. And to see if we want to read a book. And we prefer it that way. We want to choose the books we read. We do not want to feel this pressure. But even if we get a book for free, I say to the publisher, hey, this does not mean that we're going to greenlight it or anything like that. Because someone even said to me, they're like, hey, I'll trade if you'll greenlight my book. And I was like, how dare you question the integrity of our greenlight system? We do not in any way take endorsements for that or like sponsors for that. But this was for the book called 19 Steps. It comes out September 12th. Let me read the description to you. It's 1942 and London remains under constant threat of enemy attack as the Second World War rages on. In the Bethnal Green neighborhood, Nellie Morris counts every day lucky that she emerges from the underground shelters unharmed, her loving family still surrounding her. And so it just goes on about Nellie's life where she ends up with Ray and then there's an air raid and... all hope is lost, but then love triumphs. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, I mean, it's just a World War II book. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
That ish is written by Millie Bobby Brown.
Okay.
Millie Bobby Brown wrote a fiction book that's coming out in September. And guess what? Her name is as big as the title on the cover. Then when you open it up, guess what? No, it was not written by her. It was ghostwritten by this guy that's listed. I mean, I'm sure she was like, ming, 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 ming. Anyway, this was inspired by her nanny, Ruth. The book is very personal and close. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to have to see Millie Bobby Brown star as her own grandmother, Nellie, in an HBO series. And it's going to make me so mad. And I'm going to scream in the void. Also, I want to read like Kate Quinn, one of my favorite actual historical authors, who endorsed this book by saying, "My inner history loving teenage geek clapped her hands in ecstasy at the thought of a historical novel penned by Enola Holmes." And she wasn't disappointed. Your inner teenage geek was not disappointed. That's not a good endorsement.
Well, okay. I don't have any issues so far. I would say to Kate Quinn, Enola Holmes, the character, they didn't write the book. That character did not write
that
book.
Thank you. That's so exactly that right.
Is, and that's I just a don't like it
that Millie Bobby Brown is getting book deals when other better writers should get book deals. I just don't like it. I don't like it.
I don't like it, but I do understand that they're like, hey, this book with not Millie Bobby Brown's name on it, probably not going to do great. This book with Millie Bobby Brown's name on it, probably going to do pretty good.
Listen, I look forward to the Instagram post by John Bon Jovi, who's like, "This is by my daughter-in-law, Millie Bobby Brown. This book was great." I'm going to hate that.
Okay, let's do a little brainstorm here. I think you should have a book proposal, and it could say, by Jeff Chaucer's great-great-great-granddaughter, you know?
Okay, I'm back.
And it would be like, you know, that you could kind of nuance that a little bit. Channel some of his fame, you know?
Okay. I'm back in.
I don't know. Are we max capacity on, you know, World War II content? As a guy who loves it and is still reading it.
I love a World War II fiction, but hear me out. I just don't need another book with a woman on the cover facing the opposite direction, watching bombers overhead. I just don't need it. Guys, I don't need women, the backs of women anymore on World War II novels. Like, Google that. They're everywhere. I can't. Yeah. I cannot do it anymore.
You want them to turn around and face the book and not face the bomber?
I just don't want this vagueness. Well, I know why they're doing it. They're like, vagueness and faces are hard and we don't want to ruin it for you. But it's just
okay, here's an idea. What if it's her back to the bomb, middle fingers up, but she's facing you? Okay?
Is it the atomic bomb? Then I'm back in.
I don't know. I mean, would an English woman have been middle fingering? Don't love that. The atomic bomb, you know?
That's a different novel, my friend. That actually
might sell really well. So we'll come back to that. Have we talked about Greta Gerwig casually being like, yeah, so I'm doing some of the Narnia stuff, later on?
She's doing the two. The second one's not good, but she's doing that. They're redoing the... Don't look at me like that.
Aaron, how you feel about that? What's your feeling on Greta Gerwig?
That second novel is not good. You know it's not good. Don't act like it's good. She's mad.
Wow.
Trying to hold in a cough. That's how mad she is.
I'm not holding in a cough. I'm free. I have a cough drop in my mouth. Yeah. I think that the way you feel about the horse and his boy is just an indicator of your taste level. That's all.
Okay.
Is it like...
I mean, you could have called a Knight's Tale horse and his boy, you know, probably too. That would have been good.
Do you think so?
Yeah. It would have been just as good.
A horse and a boy and his big wooden stick. And like,
I'm just saying when it took 20 years to write the first book, somebody didn't work as hard on the second book.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. Wow.
Okay. No offense, C.S. Lewis. Well, also dead.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So
you say that like
people died. Life is a vapor.
What they do, Aaron.
I don't know what to tell you.
My red light this week is Justin Long. I wouldn't say longtime adversary of the show. He doesn't even know we exist.
But I do think we've hated him for a long time.
Yeah, and I don't really know why, to be honest. I just think we're with a network, and I think we've done a good job for that network. And then that network,
we've been there 6 years. We've been at that network 6 years.
You know, pretty reliable, not super controversial. He comes along. I'm not. It's. If I was trying to explain it, I would use Office Ladies, but I'm not trying to do that because I don't want to put you in a weird spot. So I'm not saying that.
Thank
I'm saying it's a similar situation, you know, of like, I don't know what your talent or your gift is, but you're here now in my medium and we're competing and I don't love that. But some, you know, I guess last week we recorded about the Jonah Hill news, and then the Jonah Hill news took another turn It just got weirder and grosser. And then Justin Long got thrown into it, and that got weird and gross. And then I don't know if you've even seen this. They revisited a Punk'd episode with Jonah Hill and Justin Long. Yeah, and I watched that. And the premise is that it's known that Justin Long, Ashton Kutcher says, has a quote minors problem, which means he likes to be with girls who are minors. And the whole premise of the prank is he's out to eat with these girls who are 17 and 18, and he's trying to get them to drink. He's trying to get them alcohol without them being carded. And then a manager comes over and is like, I need to see your ID because they're underage. It's weird,
it's
man.
It's weird. And guys, you might be like, oh, well, that was a long time ago. He was probably only like 21. No, he was 27. Boom. He was 27 years old. Okay.
It's just weird. It's just super, super, super weird.
It's very gross.
So just red light all that. You know, it's not a great look for humanity or Justin Long. So I don't know. But I think it's good when you revisit things that in the moment should have been weird, but it wasn't. But then now we see it and we're like, whoa, whoa. I think it's a good reminder that things evolve, and that's a good thing. It's also good to revisit the past sometimes and be like, am I my best self? Are the things I've always believed about myself and always how I've always conducted myself, is that always the best way, or should I maybe revise my behavior a little bit? And
that's a lot of wisdom, because that episode was in 2005. Like,
so many people were involved with that, and no one was like, whoa, this is weird. Like, they were just like, ah, funny joke,
right?
It
had to go
right?
through so many hoops to make the air, and then it made the air, and there wasn't like this big, like, and I know that there are people always who are like, hey, that's not great.
Yeah.
But like the majority voice of the entire world was like, yeah, they're so funny. That prank
yeah,
show.
Crazy, crazy episode of Punk'd, am I right? Wild. Okay, what is your green light this week?
Okay, so we have a mutual green light, but Knox is going to talk about that. So I want to share a green light. This is just revisiting, and I know Knox loves it when I talk about my favorite comedy on TV, which is What We Do in the Shadows. It's on Hulu. You guys, it's back for its fifth season. It's going to have a sixth season, and then it'll be wrapped. And for those who've never watched, I do want to clarify some things, because I get asked this a lot. First, people, it's a comedy. Guys, it's a comedy. It is set in Staten Island, New York, and it follows the lives of three traditional vampires, Nandor, Laszlo, and Nadia, and then Colin Robinson, who is an energy vampire, who's hilarious, and then Guillermo, who is my iconic favorite character, who plays Nandor's familiar. It revolves around them interacting with the modern world. Listen, this season opened with them going to a mall, and it was the delight of my life. But a lot of people ask, like, now, first of all, this is not a show. This is NSFJM, not suitable for Jamie's mom. Okay. There's a lot of cursing, and there's a lot of sexual stuff, not sexual stuff, but like sexual references, innuendo and such. But if you were like, I want to figure out if I love the show, go to season one, episode two, called City Council. If you watch that 23-minute episode and you don't love it, then you're not going to like this series at all. But if you watch that episode and you're like, okay, that was weird and a delight, then you will love this show so very much. There's so many great episodes. My favorite episode of all time is when they go to a Super Bowl party and they think it's to honor an owl, and they call it the Superb Owl Party, and then they're confused when they get there. It's fantastic. That's season two, episode three. Brain Scramblies. It's back. 22 Emmy nominations. I love the show. I dressed as Nadja for Halloween last year, like 2 years ago. I love this show. So I highly recommend you watch it.
Listen, not for me, but I love a good half hour-ish comedy. So happy for you and the
Thank
other 12
you.
People who watch this. I'm so
Stop thrilled. It! Why are you so mean to me in this episode?
I'll do the dad light first before I get to the co-green light. Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. Took Marlo to see this.
We heard that it might be good.
Yeah, it was. I was a little dubious about the previews, but Marlo had seen it and was like, I really want to see that. And I was like, okay, we'll do that. And so I just took her. She loved it. But it's basically a teenage Kraken who is living amongst humans because they're trying to hide their Kraken powers, finally realizes her full potential and has to sort through who that makes her on her own, but also like within her family and within the people she chooses to live with. It's great. It's got great voice acting. It's Jane Fonda, Lana Condor, Toni Collette, Will Forte shows up, and it's really funny. But it's just really well done. I did think it was interesting. You know how Marvel does like the, when you go sit down for like, you know, Ant-Man 12, they do like the dun, 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 dun. And it's like, there's Cap, there's Iron Man, there's all the Marvel people, like all the Avengers, like the, you're in a Marvel situation, you know, like that whole preamble.
Yeah.
Now, I guess it's the studio that makes Shrek and like Puss in Boots and all that. They do that now. So it's like, there's Shrek sitting on the moon fishing. There's Puss in Boots being awesome. There's a freaking Minions saying banana or banana or whatever. And I was like, I don't know how to feel about this. I don't need a preamble before I watch like what the studio's been up to before I watch a movie, but whatever. But that's neither here nor there. But really like Ruby Gilman. Marla really liked it too. Two thumbs up. And it's a tight 90 minutes. So that's always good to go. But the code green light for this week is Mission Impossible : Dead : Reckoning : Part one :
There's so many colons in
There's
it.
A lot of colons. There's multiple colon use, which you know I'm not a big fan of. But this is the latest iteration of the Mission Impossible franchise with Tom Cruise. I took my son. We loved it. I heard it got dinged for, like, I didn't really follow the story. Like, I don't know what the story was about. But it's like, this is Mission Impossible. Do you ever know what the story's about? No. There's a thing you're trying to get. Bad people trying to get it.
There's a weapon.
Like Ethan's working with a place, but they're also like, we're going to try to kill you, Ethan. And he's like, oh no, don't try to kill me. And there's a woman. The Swedish Nightingale shows up. Ving Rhames shows up. Simon Pegg shows up. That's pretty much it. And just new stunts. And this was great. I loved it.
Listen, can I tell you who was my secret favorite part? Like my low-key MVP?
Was it Haley Atwell?
Although I do love her. Peggy Carter for life.
Yeah.
But it's Palm who played Paris.
Oh, bro, she was so good in this.
God, she was so good in this. And I was like, this is my whole personality until Barbie comes out. Like, I am her. Like, the fact that she does as much as she does with almost no dialogue. Like,
no dialogue. She, and you know, they're in the kind of like, there's always the existential villain, right? That you don't ever see, but you just feel. But then there's always like the immediate villain who is like just the turnstile character.
Yeah.
It was Henry Cavill, I guess, last movie.
Yes.
Now
that's
it's
right.
Palm. I'm not going to get her.
Clementine?
Yeah. It's Mantis from Guardians movies. I thought she was so excellent, so vivid in a movie where everyone's kind of doing the same things they've always done. I really liked every time she showed up on camera.
No, you know? I did. And I will say those stunts, because everybody had talked about the stunt of him on the motorcycle leading up to the film. That is a child's play compared to that car chase in Rome.
Holy that, Lord, man.
That those car chases in Rome were so good, and they added a lightness to it, which I was very grateful for, because it kind of goes on and on, but they made it fun. They kind of made it harder than any stunt they've ever done before. But we talked about it, The More You Know. We talked about how that movie did financially and like how will this go forever, obviously. But I really liked the film. And as somebody who has always been a Mission Impossible fan since the first film in 1996, I thought this was top two of the seven. Like, Fallout is still my favorite of the films, but this one was excellent. It was really good.
I also really enjoyed Shea Whigham. I really enjoyed him showing up. He's a good character piece.
He is.
Yeah. And then The More You Know this week, we also talk about, I quiz Aaron and Jamie on how many scenes involve Tom Cruise sprinting in this movie.
This felt like a record, this particular film.
Yeah, I counted it. We took notes and I counted it up. So we have that conversation then. Okay, well, that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. And before you go, remember, anytime you do any shopping on Amazon, make sure you go to amazon.com/shop/thepodcastfirst. So your purchase using our affiliate link, or for every item purchased using that link this week was, Jamie, this is just 2 pounds of bananas.
Listen, I wasn't ready. This has 57,000 global ratings, 4.6 stars. This one might be my top ranked of cues that were asked.
Oh,
and
wow,
I have three for you. The first one is, how can I request yellow, slightly ripe bananas? Tired of getting green ones that never ripen. Green bananas always ripen.
Yeah.
They do. You just have to wait them out. That was the answer. Hey, just leave them in a brown paper bag with the top folded over and they will ripen. Like, that's a pro tip. And then the next question was, why is it a banana? Why is it a banana? And the answer was, well, the real question should be, why would it not be a banana? And then finally, my favorite one, why are rats eating my bananas? Mm. And the answer was, because they taste so good. Bananas do taste good. All right, you guys, don't forget, we have a Patreon free trial for BFOTS. Like, so if you're listening and you're a friend of the show, you can get your free trial as a BFOTS for 1 week. This is a great time to check out all of the great content that we have, exclusive content for the 11,000 folks who already support us monthly over on Patreon. So go to knoxandjamie.com/free trial or head over to the link in the show notes and you can sign up today and check it out and see if it's something you want to be a part of. I am Jamie Golden. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, not Threads. No, I'm out.
You're out. That was quick. That was fast.
It's just...
You went in hot. You went in real hot.
Listen, I still love Twitter. It's so hard. Listen, I tried to talk about Wimbledon and you go over to Threads and it's not in order and no one's talking about like what just happened to Djokovic and his stupid racket. And I was like, well, this is useless. This is useless. So I'm back over on
back to the dark side, huh?
The death spiral that is Twitter. All right. But you can find me there at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Nux McCoy. You can find me on socials at Nux McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.